everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here for the final episode of Apocalypse again, but not for the last time, because there's going to be another one after this. But boy howdy if we're not going to get to some of the meat and potatoes of what they decided to do this time. And I am joined, as always, by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, well, hey, what's good?
Hey.
Hello. Things are poor. Things are
They're not great. They could be better.
I don't know. I saw the ending and I think it kind of kicked ass. It sounds like you are both being kind of wieners. I think it may be owned, actually. Like, now that I'm a week out from seeing it, I'm like, no, that's like the funniest thing they could have done. Like, they couldn't do anything. There's no way they were fixing this, right?
Right, so, yeah.
Like, might as well have it be funny as hell.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Sure.
It's a very optimistic way of looking at it. I applaud you
for your optimism. Half full.
Yeah, I'm just trying to experiment with different mindsets, see what feels right.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. Listen, I understand. You sometimes, you know, people cope with loss in many different ways, you know.
Yeah, the loss of Apocalypse. Oh, I'm so sad. No, I can't watch it anymore. So last time we ended with Cordelia doing, oddly enough, reflecting on it, maybe the only successful spell she has ever cast.
It's not really even a spell. Where... She just kind of goes,
Well, she keeps saying, she's like, it's an identity spell. And like, the thing that I love about the way they handle identity spell is it's one of the most, like, if we keep saying it, our audience has to admit it's real. Everyone knows what an identity spell is. These are in all sorts of media. Everyone has the dust that makes you think you're a bad person for a while.
Is that not just cocaine? Is that not what cocaine does?
Yeah, the magic shithead dust gives you a lot of bad ideas.
That or bath salts.
Yeah, that's the one that I gotta put a baby in the oven.
Maybe that is what Cordelia's doing here. Maybe she's just blowing like bath salts into their eyes.
I think
custom bath salts.
She's not cool enough for drugs. I'm sorry. You know,
not true. Like,
I
don't condone the use, but I am just saying, like, nah.
Bath salts? Yeah, me either.
It's such a shame that the warlocks got into making like misogynist anthrax when instead they could have made like bath salts that make you think you're Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, that would be cool. I would love that. Blow those in my face before I go for a set of lifts. Oh, baby, we're cooking.
Yeah.
So they do this and then it just cuts away hard. We have to presume that the identity spell dust also knocks them unconscious, or the continuity of what happens next just cannot be real. And they do the most annoying, like, it's like a jump cut jump scare. Like, they think it's like a, I don't know, this shit sucks. It just cuts from them doing the dust thing where it's like very quiet and very like whispered Latin chanting into just a little whoof. And then it's immediately 130% volume car horns. And it's the most annoying shit because it's like, we understand what makes a jump scare annoying and we're just going to do that. Like, we're not going to do the part where it's like scary or like valuable or like building up tension or anything. We're just... Like, that's not an editing choice to just go, bah, at the audience.
It really is just, and they do the really annoying thing where, like, other shows and movies have done this too, but, like, this was a particularly annoying one where they do, like, the Wilhelm scream, but the equivalent of, like, the car horn Wilhelm scream, where it's, like, probably, like, an 18-wheeler or, like, a big rig going,
yeah,
like, wow, and they're on, like, a small city street in downtown LA. I don't think a big rig is gonna like go flying by them, so it's not even like the right car horn noise. It's just the loudest, most obnoxious car horn noise that you can put in a TV show, that's in every TV show that has a car horn noise. It's really annoying. It's really annoying, especially because the scene leading up to it is like an emotional scene, quote unquote, and nothing is like I don't know, that's a pretty big dick move to go from like soft, kind of sad, somber scene into just fully a jump scare for no reason.
You're like, hey, if we fuck this up, you as the person you are right now might cease to exist forever. Like, if this goes wrong and this spell takes hold and we don't get you out of it later, you're just a bitch for the rest of your life. Like, you're going to die.
You're dead. Yeah, no, right? Person. It's over.
Like, that's insane, right? Like, Coco is a nice lady. She just, like, had kind of a bad power, but she was, like, fine. Like, maybe a little doofy on occasion, but like, that's not a crime. It's not a crime to be doofy. But they're like, yeah, we're gonna turn you into a shithead magically. Best of luck out there.
And I would like to remind people that the reason they made her a shithead, in case you're wondering, is so that she'll checks notes be mean to Mallory, which will checks notes keep her from finding out she's a witch. Like, not given special, like, I don't know, like, instructions to be like, tell her she's, like, she'd never be good at magic, I guess. No, just tell her she's, like, real bad at, like, getting you coffee. That'll keep her from figuring out she's a witch for sure.
Yeah.
Plan, Cordelia.
It's a pretty low bar for plan, honestly. You know, like, yep. I don't really understand what she's doing at all with this.
Blaine is doing an enormous amount of heavy lifting.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I would also like to remind everybody that, like, they also magically, but like not in the context of the show, magically as in the writers forgot magically, that the women in this show now all have omnipotence and know everything about everything and every plan that any other character has ever had and how they are going to counter it.
Shitty magic, but not in the Cordelia shitty magic.
Yeah. Like, in the show writer sense, in the show biz sense.
In the shitty magic, the American Horror Story shitty magic that you're used to from other seasons.
Yeah. So, big scare, jump scare plays, and now Coco, parentheses, mean and evil, is hooting and hollering as she's getting into an Uber. She's in the Uber and she's already upset because the Uber driver that we can't see, who's out of frame, refuses to roll up the windows in the back seat. And I'm like, did they remove the panel that lets you roll up the window in this very expensive looking Escalade? Can
they
you not do it?
Locked it down, I guess.
Fucked up. Fucked up. Yeah, so the plan here is, so her hair gets messy and she's complaining because the Uber driver won't let her, like, get into the, or, like, close the windows, I guess. And Mallory, who is, like, it's weird because this version of Mallory seems, like, way less competent than, like, the incompetent version of Mallory we saw in episodes 1 through 3. She's, like, a new, different, like, kind of, like, mousy, incompetent intern. But, like, she's supposed to be in charge of booking a hair appointment with Mr. Gallant. And it's playing this, like, this is part of the plan, and this is how Gallant ends up being in the bunker. But Gallant's not, like, relevant to
the
plan.
He doesn't do anything.
This part's kind of inconsequential. Because it makes it seem like, because spoiler alert, they're going to pan over, and the person driving the Uber is Madison. So they make it seem like this was all, like, a staged thing. Like, oh, they're going to meet Gallant. And then a couple months later, that's going to be important because she's going to also be getting her hair cut with Gallant again when the bombs go off. And she's going to bring Mallory and Gallant. I'm like, but Mallory is her, like, assistant. She's probably already with her most of the time. Like, why are we now looping in, like, that's why Mallory is with her, because they're at the hairdresser. Like, what? That's nothing.
She needs a sassy gay best friend to help her through the apocalypse, or else she's not going to make
it. Can't.
Like, we're going to make Mallory too pathetic, so she needs back. You're going to be mean. You're going to be fucking pathetic. So, like, we're going to need back.
Yeah, we need to introduce a new character, and that character is Gallant, I guess. And so you might be thinking, oh, so this is a setup. This scene is setting up where like, Madison's going to drop them off, and then this is going to be the day where the bombs drop. Wrong. This is a random day, like, a month before that happens. And also, they did not, they give such, like, they gave such little shits when making this scene that when it pans to Madison, it's supposed to be, like, a really cool reveal of, like, oh, this was all part of the plan, which makes no sense, first and foremost. But then secondarily, they have Madison dressed in, like, all leather with, like, big sunglasses on and, like, leather driving gloves. Like, she's, like, goth right now for some reason. And they could not give less of a fuck about their shot. And in the reflection of her big fucking sunglasses is just the back of the studio. They didn't bother trying to change the graphic in her sunglasses. You can just see they're parked in the back of the studio. It is so fucking funny. I'm like, you really wanted this scene to be really cool, so you gave her sunglasses because you wanted this to be a reveal that is nothing. And you couldn't even bother to fucking edit out, like, the studio from the sunglasses.
Why do I care who drove Mallory to the liquor store? Like, what do you mean,
I don't care. 1 month before anything interesting even happens in this, in, like, this scenario that we're doing.
And it's not like, it's not like some kind of a Memento reveal where you're like, oh shit, that was the person who set it up the whole time. It's like, yeah, who else?
Yeah.
Who else would it have been?
Also, I would like to point out that in this scene, when she goes inside to, like, get her haircut, and she's getting her haircut by Gallant, she, at this point, the person next to her turns around in their little haircut chair, and it is, da-da-da-da, it's her boyfriend who ends up being a huge problem later on in the bunker. So, hey, Madison, I don't know what Cordelia told you this part of the plan was. Probably should have made sure, like, no shitty guys got involved, because only Coco could manage to find, like, the one man who, if she brought him into the bunker, would end up killing her and potentially other people. Who could say? So why did they do this? Because bringing her here to, like, set up the Gallant thing is why she meets Brock. Gallant, who serves no purpose, is the reason that she ends up meeting Brock, who ends up being a problem for everybody in the bunker.
Gallant, who kills Bubbles? Evie? Someone? I think?
The and same then Brock lady.
Kills, like, a bunch of other people? Yeah. So this is, like, a really bad place to bring them, huh? Like, this is two people who are actively detrimental to the cause.
Yeah.
It's really cool that they were like, well, what if we had Madison drop her off one day to meet some new friends while we do this plan? I think we need to involve new friends into this equation. We couldn't bring...
Why is a hairstylist involved in the plan? What does that have to do with anything?
Oh, my God. Yeah, and so... After Madison drops them off, this is another fucking literally nothing for no one reveal where Madison turns her head and she puts the car back in gear. And as she's turning her head, a big bus drives by and Dinah's an ad for Dinah's show is on the side of the bus. And at this point, we've not time skipped, which is important because I'll remind you that literally 24 hours ago in Showtime, Dinah made the deal that she'd get a talk show in exchange for murdering all the witches. So either Dinah's been, like, workshopping this idea for a really long time, and she already had, like, headshots ready and, like, ad campaigns and, like, the premise of a talk show, or she came up with that shit quick, like, real, real fast turnaround.
Also, just a reminder, only 13 episodes of a talk show.
Yes. Well, she's going to get even less than that because the fucking apocalypse is, like, a month from this weird scene. So, like, she's not going to get anything. Anyway, that's enough of this flashback.
Sold her soul to the devil to, like, film a pilot.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Oof. Yeah. Oof. Bad deal. It's pretty bad. Yep.
That's so rough. So that's the weird, like... That chunk of scenes is literally just to establish, like, oh, and that's how Coco knows these two people and why she would bring them along. And I'm like, I believe that Gallant was her hairstylist. You didn't have to, like, trick me.
That's, like, the thing, right? Because, like, none of this is important at all because, like, you can just say, like, I would assume that under the identity spell, she starts dating Brock. Like, you know what I mean? And has a hairdresser. Like, nothing here is necessary. Like, I don't know, like, who was that person in like, the studio at FX who was just like, wait a minute, where did this hairdresser come from? You gotta fix this, Ryan, you know, but...
Yeah, like, she's just, like, a rich lady. It would make sense if she's bringing her assistant that she'd also bring her hairdresser.
Yeah. She's the kind of lady who would, like, turn her hair into a big-ass stool made of hair and be like, check this out. So, like, yeah, I believe she'd bring a hairdresser. Why not?
Wouldn't you actually want her, like, bring, like, Madison, let's say, right? And, like, have her be a friend that could take a trip on the plane?
No, because then she's a risk because Michael Langdon would detect that she was a witch because she wasn't under the identity spell.
Not because he brought her back from hell and knows what she looks like. Not that reason. Not that one.
Okay.
Just because she smells.
I was just going to say, because I don't know that you could only do two of the identity spell, if we established that yet, or anything, and that you could do a third, maybe. I don't know how much MP a magic spell and an identity spell costs.
It is Cordelia. Take that into account. It is Cordelia who's doing it, so.
Yeah, okay, yeah. No, you I didn't think of that part. You're right. But, oof.
Yeah. Anyhow. Also very cool that her identity spell can, like, just not work, which is why they had to make Coco be mean to Mallory in case it stopped working. But again, it's Cordelia, so, like, I guess that makes sense. Speaking of Cordelia, we're back at Misty's hut, and she's just sadly staring at one of the walls. Misty's still not at her own home. And Myrtle's like, here, I made you a soup. And then Madison kicks in the door and is like, I want to burn a witch, which she's clearly talking about Dinah because of how this is framed. Madison has never met Dinah in the terms of the show, which is a huge, like, leap of logic for her to see just a random person on the side of a bus be like, and let's just say she does know that she's, like, the new voodoo queen. So she knows it's the voodoo queen. And then immediately made the jump from she couldn't have used her magic as the voodoo queen to get her own TV talk show. She must have, I don't know, made a deal with the devil. That's what I think has happened, which is a fucking insane leap.
And I think the implication is that, like, maybe Madison is just, like, so convinced that no one could make it in Hollywood without a deal with the devil. And, like, that's a little funny, but the problem is she just, like, doesn't know who Dinah is, and also, like, I don't think the voodoo witches and the voodoo practitioners in general seem to, like, follow the same rules for that. Like, they were kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, they have, like, Papa Legba. Papa Legba, like, grants all sorts of wishes. Like, for all she knows, she made a Papa Legba deal, which doesn't involve them at all. Yeah, and this they're doing it again. They're doing the same thing they did about Mead, because then Myrtle is like, Dinah double-crossed us to get a seat at the outpost. And I'm like, she didn't double-cross you. She was never on your team. She was very explicitly not on your team for, like, all of it. The voodoo ladies don't fuck with y'all. Like, that's not your teammate. Like, the same with Mead, with, like, oh, the traitor. Who was the traitor? Mead was never on your team. She hated, she always hated, like, witches for some reason.
No spells.
Yeah, and also I'm like, why does she need a TV show to get a seat at the outpost? If she just helped him, like, shoot up the witch school, why can't her reward just be a seat at the outpost? Why does she, like, have to get a show first before the apocalypse so that she can get into the outpost? Whatever. Anyway, Cordelia's like, no, we can't set her on fire. We'll deal with her later, which is a piss-ass fucking setup for something that's going to happen in about 5 minutes. And now I have great news, everyone. It's been, Checks Notes, 9 episodes, and now we're picking up exactly where we left off at the end of episode 3 or 4. I don't remember. We're finally out of the flashback. Yeah, everybody, baby. Everybody, We're finally out of the flashback. It's very important that you know we're out of the flashback.
Welcome to the present. Finally, present day. 7 episodes deep, baby.
Yay, the payoff.
And, yeah. And it's the end, too.
But. So we're watching the scene again where Mallory was getting interviewed by Michael Langdon, and she just repeatedly was like, no, no, stop it. I don't want to be interviewed. Ah! And then it does a big fireball from the furnace, and then he goes, blah, and does the spooky face thing that he, like, does for some fucking reason. Can anyone explain why he does that? Because I watched the whole season, and I don't think there's ever a reason that he's just like, it's like a thing I do. I make my face turn all weird and go, bah, at people. It's like my favorite move.
It's like Satan Tourette's. It never works for him. It's Satan Tourette's. He can't help it.
Because it never works. It's like a 0% hit rate move. I don't know why he keeps trying. He's like, maybe I'll yell to him. Like, all it's ever done is made John Henry go like, oh, we got to kill this kid.
Yeah. Yeah, it has like a 0% hit rate. And also, he only ever seems to do it when, like, he's feeling scared. So it's almost like when, like, a squid inks or something, which makes it a lot less, like, intimidating, I think. Which it already wasn't intimidating, but the fact that he only ever does it like in a retaliatory sense really does kind of take the fangs out of it, no pun intended. And then when we say that, like, the scene plays,
he's not
again
a vampire,
right?
It, like, this episode, which already cannot afford to give up any additional time because it has so much it needs to explain, somehow manages to fit 5 whole minutes of, like, the TV show we've already watched, like, frame for frame, just like all of the shots, all of them. And it just makes us watch them again, just like shot for shot, like it was in episode 3, which is crazy. Crazy for how little time they had to actually resolve stuff in this episode. And then now it's time to prepare for one of the more confusing and infuriating parts of this plan.
yeah. So, hey, remember how, like, we did all of this setup because, well, there's not, like, any way all of us are going to make it through this apocalypse that we just, like, decided not to really try to stop in a meaningful fashion. But what we can do is put Mallory and Coco under an identity spell and have them meet these two people, and somehow this will end up with them in a bunker so that those two at least will be able to carry out the mission and save us all. Well, actually, all the fucking witches are here too. They just also are here. They all, as we know, they just live through the apocalypse. And you might say, like, well, did they, like, build another bunker? Did they do, like, a big spell or something? No, stupid. They're in the mud. They're in the mud, you dumb motherfucker. It's like in,
kind of.
It's like in Predator.
They're, like, under,
Arnold,
like, some gravel.
Put himself in cold mud. Yeah.
They're under gravel, which is, like, even worse. Like, it's just loose rocks. Just, like, a bunch of loose rocks. It's so cool.
Oh, my God. So they're claiming it's like, oh, yeah, we buried ourselves in the magic healing mud that Misty had, and we just, like, and that means we're constantly regenerating, which I don't think would let you survive, like, starvation and, you know, not moving for a whole year. It's, like, really bad for the human body to not move for a year, you know, and not eat anything and not poop and not have your organs function and, like, literally never use your musculature. Also, I don't know, I'm not, like, a bomb scientist or nothing, but I feel like a couple inches of loose gravel is not gonna cut it when it comes to, like, radiation. Also, I'm not sure what a half-life on an atom bomb is, but I do think it's more than, like, 20 minutes, which is what it would need to be for it to be safe for them to come out of the ground a year later, which, yeah, that's what they do. They have the hands pop out of the ground like it's gonna be spooky zombies, but instead it's all the witches, which begs the question, why did we do the identity spell if we were just going to be here afterwards? Like, I mean, the only way this would be worse is if, like, the thing we were doing, like, the final step of the plan, like, didn't need to be after the apocalypse and it's completely needless. We'll get there. So, Yeah, they just like pop out of the ground, and then Myrtle's like, oh, we came too because we felt all the girls die. And it's like, shut up, Myrtle. I'm sick of
so,
you.
Okay, so was that part of the plan? Was the plan that like Venable was going to go crazy and poison everyone? Because like, if the girls had never died, which I can't imagine was part of the plan, because why the fuck would it be?
Mm-hmm.
Then would they have never woken up? Like, would they have just stayed under the ground for forever? They would never, like, know when to get up? Like, I don't understand. Because if you think about it, like, thinking about it retroactively, because remember, we're catching up now. So, like, what's about to happen is they're about to go to the bunker, and it's going to pick up exactly where we left off, where she revives them. So what did, if we're looking at the plan, we've taken a step back from the plan, and now we're looking at the whole timeline, because we saw how the plan was, I guess, started, quote unquote, and we have seen how it ends, which is everybody eating the poison apples and dying. What was accomplished by the witches during that, the interim between those two points? What things were like done that required us to send the girls to the bunker in order under an identity spell? Like, what did they accomplish by doing that? Like, that they didn't already have? Was what information was gotten?
Let me think. Wait. Nope. No, this is a hard question. Like, could you phrase it a little more simply? Because I feel like I feel like I'm having trouble with it. I don't know why. Maybe it's
Let's try real simple.
Sure.
Here.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you think of a single reason they had to send Mallory and Coco to the bunker? Is there anything that happened between them arriving at the hair salon and them getting poisoned with apples that was like plot critical, or like, I guess, mission critical rather? Because like, I am now thinking about it, and absolutely not.
This is hard.
Like, there,
yeah,
no.
Wait, so
like, it's not, it's because there isn't any.
Yeah, no.
It's because there's not, they didn't do anything in there. Like, the whole idea was supposed to be like, oh well, Mallory needs more time to become the new supreme or whatever, but like, you're telling me that identity spell wasn't like really holding her back on that front?
I got it. No, I know. Yeah. They knew that there would be problems with the outposts, and Michael would have to come personally to interview them all, including two of the witches, which would cause Mallory to yell no, and like fire shoots out of her or something, which triggers her spells, and then they wake up like, aha, that all happened, so we can like dig ourselves out, right?
Well, didn't wake up till she died of being poisoned.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I got nothing then. Yeah, there's no reason. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'd like to add follow up. If you're enjoying this podcast and are interested in supporting us or having access to additional bonus episodes, consider subscribing to our Patreon over at patreon.com/greatandterribleahs. Supporters who pledge $5 or more a month will get access to our monthly Patreon exclusive episode, in which we discuss various American Horror Story spinoffs, such as American Horror Stories. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to see you around next week. If this was the case, because like, you could easily have framed this if you were better at writing TV shows. If I assume you're listening to this, Ryan Murphy and Brad Fulcheck.
Right, come on.
If you were better at writing TV shows, this is the kind of plot point. Like, this whole plan up until, you know, the girls die by eating poison apples because they're fucking stupid, I guess. Well, technically Coco gets killed by Brock, but I guess you could say that's the aftermath of them sending Coco to a fucked up hair salon like a month ahead of time for some reason. So maybe that's just like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anyway, you could easily reform this type of plot to being like, oh, well, the reason we had to put these two under a spell is because Mallory had the most potential, but there's no way that we're going to survive the blast, so we need to get them into the bunker somehow so they don't die. And then we can, once like it's safe, hopefully Mallory like eventually like comes to and like gets her powers or whatever. But the problem is they wrote themselves into a corner, and they can't do that because if Cordelia were to die, say in, I don't know, a nuclear explosion, Mallory
would
immediately
pick the witches up.
Well, no, Mallory would immediately become the supreme and probably immediately know who she is And then, like, now she's on her own to fight Michael, and she doesn't, like, know why she's there or how she got there. And she's just now in a, like, a state of, like, confusion because she was under an identity spell and didn't know it. But because Cordelia, if she dies, immediately Windmill slams the Supreme Powers into Mallory, they couldn't have Cordelia die, which is why they had to be like, no, Cordelia has to live somehow. And then we have to explain... how Cordelia still applies to this plot, which means they had to, like, completely roll back the thing that makes sense, which is just, you know, we needed to put you guys under an identity spell so, A, there'd be two of you in case something happens, and, B, so that Mallory can eventually become the Supreme and she's our only chance. That is something. That's, like, a plot that you could use, but because they put in that if the Supreme dies, the other one immediately becomes the Supreme, they couldn't. So they had to keep Cordelia alive, which is how we got this.
Unless her cerebrum is too small or whatever yeah. the fuck they said last time.
Unless she had too many lumps in her brain or too few lumps in her brain. I don't remember. Something about that.
Something, right, yeah. yeah. Something about her phrenology. Yeah.
But ultimately, all that to say, regardless of whether or not the plan actually accomplished anything, what was the plan? Because it could not have possibly ended with Venable poisoning everybody. That's an insane thing for Cordelia to predict unless she's fucking Doctor Strange. And she's not, because if she could predict the future, this would be a totally different, like, situation. This would be a totally different show. Who knows? Who fucking knows? There is not... And we'll get there in a second, but, like... All of this to say, not only did this plan not do anything, but in about 5 minutes, this plan that they've done is about to, like, actually make it harder for them to do their first plan that they tried to do a year ago before they decided to do this. The thing that they decided to do of giving them an identity spell, sending Coco to a hairstylist, having her meet two new people, is all going to have, overall, a more negative outcome than if they had just stuck to their original plan of trying to teach Mallory how to time travel, which is phenomenal to give us, what, 8 episodes, 9 episodes of buildup to just say, yeah, we fucked it. This was all just to show you that this was a bad plan that we did wrong. You saw the final parts of our plan being fucked up and being bad, actually. Which is, to be fair, that is very honest and true to, like, how the show usually goes. So I guess that's fair. Anyway... We've now caught up to a scene in the episode 4 where she has revived. They're now all at the actual, like, underground bunker. All of the people are dead on the floor because they all ate the poison apples. And Cordelia revives her witches and Dinah, which we're going to find out why she revived Dinah in a second. It's so stupid. It's so stupid, but kind of funny. Because she revives Dinah back in episode 3 or 4 or whatever, and Dinah's like, I'm not with you guys. Why did you revive me? What the fuck? I hate it here. Like, I didn't ask you to do that. Whatever. This gets such a funny payoff that's nothing for no one. And then they all turn around and they're like, it's time to fight Michael Langdon because he just gave his speech that he gave in episode 4. But he adds some, it's his speech, but plus a DLC, and that's how you know we're continuing on in the original timeline
new
we were watching
content,
in episodes 1 through 3. Yeah, new content. It's armor for your horse. Michael adds a bunch of stuff to his fuck-ass speech about, like, the Bible. Like, he just says stuff from Revelation, and I'm like, you don't want a biblical apocalypse. That's not your apocalypse. That's bad for you.
Yeah.
You don't want this.
I
want
to bring about the apocalypse that says I get my fucking ass beat. Like, no, man, you don't want that one. I'm bringing about the prophecy of me getting fucking owned.
I love that for him. And then after he's done, Myrtle is like, well, the apocalypse only matters if you killed all the witches first. And I'm like, I don't think that's fucking true, Myrtle,
yeah,
because all of you are alive and you couldn't stop Michael from doing it the first time. So what she says is nothing for nobody. And then Michael's like, yeah, okay, that's nothing for nobody. Can you guys, like, bow to me or whatever? Because I run the world now. And Meadbot also screams at them. And Cordelia's like, no. And then Dinah pipes back up again and is like, okay, well, that's nice, everyone. As I have stated previously, want nothing to do with the witches. You needed me for my voodoo powers, but I'm actually going to work with Satan because that's who I've been working with this whole time. Bye-bye. And here's the payoff for all of this. Marie Laveau, the lady from season 3, shows up. And I guess she's just been, like, waiting in a hallway until now, until she had a cool-ass time to enter the conversation.
Yeah.
And is like, fuck you, Dinah, and kills her with a machete.
Can I just add one other thing, too, about Marie Laveau?
Yes.
Once again, this is a real fucking person! But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. She had really good timing. The real Marie Laveau had really good kick-ass timing for killing people with a machete.
Yeah, serious.
She's a lot like Jason Voorhees in that way, I find.
surviving everything. Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah. Should we get a flashback to explain how Marie Laveau is here? Great, we have time. We just got out of a flashback, and now we're getting another one.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? Oh my god! Like, truly, deeply, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, you're finally free of flashbacks. They're like, no, you're not. No, you're not. Get back here. I got another flashback to put you in.
If fucking Cordelia survived a nuclear bomb, I believe you that you just brought Marie back, or like she made a deal with Papa Legba to come back or something. Like, I believe you. Like, if you want to her in the show that bad, I would believe that the power of your friendship, Ryan Murphy and Brad Fulchek, was strong enough to bring her back. I would believe that over this, yeah. Which is Cordelia promised Papa Legba Dinah's soul in exchange for Marie's, and I'm like, can you promise him somebody else's soul? Is that something you can do?
Yeah, right?
That seems to undermine, like, the whole... Because the thing about selling your soul is, like, it's a philosophical
Can you
dilemma,
imagine?
A spiritual dilemma. It's not like,
right.
You can't just be like, do you want that guy's soul? And he'd be like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, like, Satan comes up to you and is like, in exchange for your soul, I'll give you anything your heart desires. I just point to, like, the guy at Subway making my sandwich. Can it be that guy's soul instead? And Satan's like, yeah, that's fine.
Sure.
It's like the apes.
Yeah, sounds fair.
You know, it's like the crypto apes. It works just like that. Don't worry about it. Your soul.
Oh, my God. Cool. So I guess that's something Cordelia was allowed to do. Also, remember how Papa Legba already offered her something and she said no? And then so I guess she went back to him and was like, hey, follow-up offer. What if I still don't give you the thing you wanted, but I give you a different person who doesn't consent?
It's cool. I love having multiple offers, actually. It's like my favorite activity.
Oh, wait, but didn't she need Dinah to get to Papa Legba in the first place?
That's a great point. she did.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just bringing that up for some reason. I don't know. I don't know that Dinah would have gone along with this, but yeah.
And the other implication is that part of the reason this deal was acceptable was because Marie Laveau was so dog shit at torture that Papa Legba was just, like, sick of it. Like, she was supposed to be torturing that one incredibly racist lady, and her heart just wasn't in it. She was like, I don't want to smack Bonita or whatever the fuck her name
Borquita.
Was.
Borquita. You put some respect on Borquita's name.
She's like, I don't want to hit Borquita no more. And Papa Legba's like, come on, you're supposed to have fun with this. And she's like, I'm just not really feeling it. And he's like, ugh, I'll take anyone else. You got an Oprah analog? I'll take that.
But, like, also, she was very happy to do it, right? Like, she even killed one of Borquita's kids in front of her in, like, hell. You know what I mean? Who, like, technically didn't really have a whole lot to do with, like, the whole thing. That was fine.
She loves doing wanton violence and, like, twerking on her opponent's grave so much that she's doing it right now in the scene.
Yeah.
She kills somebody with a machete and then does a fucking Fortnite dance and is like, you're bad at voodoo.
Me if I was good at voodoo and I diffed the other voodoo user.
It's unbelievable.
It really is.
Oh, my God. Yippee! So Dinah got revived from eating a poison apple just to get fucking owned 15 seconds later by Marie Laveau, who has a machete. So that happens, and then Meadbot, in case you're wondering if Marie Laveau is going to be, like, important, and, like, this is we needed to, like, sacrifice Dinah to have a better summon, no. They just wanted Marie Laveau to be back in the show to remind you that death is not permanent, nor does it matter in this television show. You have any idea how fucking pissed I'd be if I was Marie Laveau and I get like back to Earth and find out that someone like traded another person's soul so I could be alive again? Like, yes, holy shit, this kicks ass. Then I walk outside and see there was a nuclear fucking holocaust and like the whole entire planet is covered in nuclear fallout. Yeah. I'd be so fucking mad.
Thanks for not. It's like when your alarm goes off early on, it's not even a school day. That's exactly the metaphor I want to use for waking up to a nuclear apocalypse, okay?
Yeah.
Well, in case you forgot that Kathy Bates has the arm cannon from Space Adventures Cobra, great news. She goes Barrett Wallace mode immediately.
Yep.
And is like, it's time to bow down or get shot. And then Cordelia goes, the bippity boppity boo, and Kathy Bates explodes, which, like, damn, Cordelia, seems like you should have fucking done that before when all your witches were getting murked and you were just kind of like, I think I'll just cry upstairs. Like, if you were able to just go, like, ooga chaka, and then she just went, like, what are we doing here? Like, I cannot overstate how much she just, like, says a small phrase and then Meadbot
like nothing.
Starts, like, violently convulsing and then pops like a fucking balloon. Oh.
Robots are notoriously very susceptible to magic damage.
This is something that's so annoying this episode, is Cordelia and Michael both just get, like, such overwhelming power that it's just, like, pointless to have them interact with other characters in any meaningful way. Like, hey, I'll just spoil. Langdon just full-on goes Akira later. Like, it's stupid.
And so Meadbot exploded. Just like exploded, like just from the inside. And as she's like laying on the ground.
That's the end.
Yeah.
So you might wonder what was the point of Meadbot? Why did we need Meadbot? What did Meadbot accomplish? Do you think it was relevant that Meadbot discovered she wasn't human?
She got to be like a little bit gay with Miss Venable. Like a little bit, but that's more confusing than anything in the bigger scheme of things now that we know who Miss Venable is.
Can a human learn to be human?
Not if they have scoliosis.
Yeah. Yeah, not if she has scoliosis. Right. Absolutely. If the human has scoliosis, no. If the robot has a gun arm, yes. Absolutely.
The most like frustrating part is like as Meadbot's dying, like her head exploded off perfectly. And then Michael, of course, goes over to like be like, no, my goth robot mom that works for Mossad. And as she's dying, she starts very slowly singing Daisy Daisy or whatever the fuck the song is actually called, which is a direct ripoff of 2001 A Space Odyssey, like fully a direct ripoff of 2001 A Space Odyssey for some reason. It doesn't even like make this character seem cool. It's not like a callback to anything. It's just, we've seen a movie. Is that anything? Do you like that we the people who wrote this TV show have seen a movie? Is that cool? Have you seen the movie?
Which the thing that's so crazy to me about that is that like it makes sense to some extent in Space Odyssey, because like HAL is supposed to be technology gone wild, and the whole thing is that was like one of the first synthesized bits of audio from like early like Bell Labs computers and stuff. So it was like saying like, this is, you know, where it all stemmed from. And all. It's like a cool thing. Whereas when they have Kathy Bates do it, you're just like, why are you doing that? What are you doing? Stop doing that.
Did Mutt and Jeff program this to happen? If so, fucked up. Fucked up and evil that they programmed this to happen. Wow.
He gave the robot death throws. Why?
I think the thing that really frustrated me too is just that like this whole existential crisis that Mead had in like one episode, Like, and even, like, the little warnings that they get, like, she's got to think she's human. Like, it doesn't work or make any sense because it's directly contradicted by, like, also she's kind of like Mega Man in a way, you know, like, in these scenes. Like, it doesn't fucking work.
Yeah, they're both, like, agents of Mossad, you're right.
It's like, you know, these memories of mine where they're saying, whatever, time to gun down some witches. Like, all right, well, I got over that quick.
They programmed a memory into Meatbot. I'll have you remember, not only is she an agent of Mossad, but also, like, she, like, got her boob touched at a theater when she was, like, 15 by another 15-year-old. And she's like, wow, I really hate men, and I hate this. I love Halloween. That's one thing that I do love is Halloween and being an assassin. Those are the two things I do like. Getting my boob honked? No, thank you. Cool. Damn. This is so cool. What a cool robot to program. If I was programming a robot, I would give it some pretty cool memories like that.
Like, people complain a lot about media having, like, loose ends or, like, unfinished plot lines. But I would say that American Horror Story has a way worse problem, which is pointless plot lines, like random things they introduce here and there that just go nowhere and don't affect anything.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no point to them. Like, everything involving Meatbot, like, including the fact that Meatbot exists. They could have just not had Mead die, you know? Like, and it would be the same. Because they're like, well, we have to get rid of Mead. She's, like, a huge problem. It's like, you're borderline omnipotent witches. She's an old lady with a rifle. Shut up. Get it together.
Incredible.
Sure, she's the supreme, but, like, what if a squirt little old lady pulled out an AK, you know?
Great news. Someone else has the gun arm now. Not in, like, the literal sense, but, like, Madison picks up the gun arm. Which I guess implies that it has a regular trigger on it, like a regular gun, which is an insane thing to imply, that the robot's inbuilt gun arm has a regular trigger that a human being can use. Insane. Yeah. What's the use case for that? These guys are dog shit at making robots, I have to say. What is the design element here? Why? Why would you do that? But it does.
You can't just say it's magic, because what spell is that? What spell is make robot gun arm fire? Like, fuck off.
A cool power we didn't know that Madison had, specifically just her. Not that it will matter even a little bit. I regret to inform you. Like, many things in this show won't matter.
I was going to say, right? Like, what has mattered, really? But...
It does work. She does shoot Michael with it. Like, she shoots Michael with the gun arm. So we know it has a trigger on it. And then Michael gets blown the fuck up by, not literally, but, like, gets riddled with bullets. And then Myrtle walks over and rips off a piece of Michael's hair and is like, you gotta take this, Mallory. You gotta use this and go back in time. So, how did you go back in time to the Russian princess lady? Because I don't think you owned anything that lady had. So, like, what? Why did you have to steal some of Michael's hair? What if we hadn't gotten to this point?
Also, if you needed Michael's hair or any of his, like, genetic samples, you had so many opportunities.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, a lot. And you know what? That would have, like, given some, like, actual, like, reason for you to be in a murder house from season one if you had gotten something there that, like, Mallory passed on or something. You know what I mean? Like,
or
that could actually...
It would give Mallory, you know, at the very least, it would give a little bit of substance to this plan to say, like, well, Mallory hasn't, like, met Michael face-to-face, like, one-on-one, so, like, she's the only one who can get close enough to, like, get his hair for this thing that we need. That's why she has to go to the bunker.
Yeah.
But no one ever mentioned that before, that we needed part of Michael's hair. Nobody ever mentioned that part.
There's a couple opportunities to have made this a better, you know... Store everything, season, story, anything, episode, even. But yeah, nope. Anyhow, so we need
two sentence horror story or whatever. Yeah. And then Cordelia, like, looks at them and is like, Michael for sure isn't dead. And I'm like, what? Like, you guys are susceptible to gun. What do you mean? Like,
shut
why
the fuck
why
up,
do you
Cordelia.
Think he's not?
You've barely been right, like, this whole time. Like, get out of here.
I think she's just mad that they're super susceptible to gun. And so, like, she's like, well, he certainly couldn't be. That's why he has the advantage over us or something. And then Madison's like, don't worry, I'll buy you guys some time so that you can do the going back in time spell. And I'm like, okay, if that's your, like, angle, we need to Jason Voorhees this motherfucker. Cut his head and his hands off. At least give him, like, give him a bit of a struggle when he wakes up. Like, if you know you've got, like, what, like a minute or two of downtime, decimate that boy. Yeah. Smash his ass up.
If he's so fucking excited to be a Christ analog, you know, I'll nail his hands to the roof.
Yeah.
You know, I'll put his left hand on the roof and the right hand down a well. And yeah, best of luck, motherfucker. Yeah absolutely.
Now it's time for the payoff of having fucking Coco go get her hair cut a month before we did the plan, I guess. Because as Mallory is running upstairs to go fucking get in the bathtub to do the time travel thing, because that's something you have to do, I guess, Brock fucking stabs her. Because he can't read the fucking room.
And he's just like, I have decided I hate women.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because,
like, the other thing, too, is, like, even if Brock was, like, in I'm gonna kill Coco a second time mode, which he already killed her once, so I don't know why he'd be like, well, just in case, you know, a witch shows up and revives her. I don't know why he'd be hanging around still. But, yeah, he just decides, oh, I'll kill the little mousy assistant that Coco fucking hated. That'll be a way to get one over on Coco, I guess.
And again, read the fucking room, Brock. I know you heard all those people hooting and hollering and all that gunfire and shit. Like, I know for a fucking fact you heard those people being like, we have to stop the Antichrist. Like, all right, I get that you're mad at Coco. Perhaps maybe there are other more pressing issues.
There's better ways of doing this, too, because a lot of, like, time travel stories and things like Lost is big on this have, like, and the idea of fate or time fighting back in a way or preventing your change through, like, even, like, real-world things that sort of stop and affect it. And had that been introduced, you could say, okay, you know what? That's kind of an interesting kind of little twist here that Brock did that as sort of fate's way of saying, no, time's not easy to change, you know? But no, it's just bullshit, stupid, like, oh yeah, Brock's here to fuck things up for drama, even though I don't think anyone watching this cares anymore, but whatever, you know. So yeah. Anyway, Mallory's dead. I guess we can't just undo everything.
Man. Thanks, Brock.
The show you're pitching of, like, having fate itself resisting things and having it, like, become more and more obvious that fate is, like, actively intervening. Like, it is, in fact, a force that is taking place. It's not just, like, weird random chance.
Yeah.
That would be so good. We should make a video game about that and call it Chrono Cross. people will love it. I think it's a great idea.
I'll have you know I've never played Chrono Cross, and this is a very original idea I had from recently watching 11/22/63 on Netflix, which also does that. But
sick. Yeah, man. Yeah, no, it's so much better than what we have here.
Cool.
So, so Brock stabs her for, like, no real discernible reason. And Myrtle runs in and goes, oh, motherfucker, and then just lights him on fire. And that's that, I guess.
Cool. I'm glad that Brock got to be included in this show. He really affected a lot of very important plot points, including making everything that we just did for the last 9 to 10 episodes kind of nothing, because now Mallory has been stabbed and is dying and will die, confusingly enough, will die. But you know who didn't die because he's evil Jesus? Michael Langdon. He sucked all the blood back into his body. Okay. What a cool thing to show that they had to, he needs his blood. He is immortal, but he needs his blood. So he sucks it back into his body.
He's the son of the fucking devil, right? Like the Satan and shit. Like, he doesn't have biology. He shouldn't need I need oxygen in these cells. Like, what are you talking about? Like, all right. But
what do I look like, a plant? I can't photosynthesize. I need that real red blood.
My iron levels. Fuck.
My head. I'm so woozy. I'm so cold.
Oh, I'm gonna need to lie down.
If only I had a spell to bring things back to life that I had to show in a supreme test. Whatever. Anyway.
Do you think? Here's the question. Do you think that his immortality is just that, like, he dies, he gets sent back to hell, and his dad's like, "Get the fuck out of here," and like sends him back up, and that's why there's some downtime in between.
You're 8, time to get a job, yeah.
Like, it's like a game over screen from an old arcade game. Yeah. Like, he gets strapped to a table, but if he puts the coins in, he just gets kicked out a window back into life again or something.
Yeah. He's alive.
Mike Hagger, but he's sucking blood into his body instead of blowing out the...
So he slurps, he gets his slurp juice back into him, and he stands up and immediately just like looks at Madison and just her head's gone. It's ridiculous. Just like pops her head instantly.
Real scanner shit.
True. Yeah. And like Madison didn't buy any time, to be clear. Like, she shot him down the one time and then he stood back up again and she went, "Oh shit," and then died. And that was like, didn't even just fight. It's one of those things you think that, especially like the fire witch, maybe would be like, "I'm going to burn his blood. That's probably bad for him. I'm not sure how it's bad for him, but it's likely he doesn't enjoy this. So I'm going to light him up." Like, Madison, your move is fire. Do fire. Fuck.
It was on cooldown. She used all of her like attack points on the gun arm, and so now she can't use fireball. That's how it works.
It probably fucking is, though, yeah.
So Madison just like explodes. I would like to remind you, this is important to me, and also it should be important to anybody watching the show. No reason. We'll talk about it probably in our next episode, but I would like to point out that the last thing anybody remembers about Madison is that she died heroically for her coven sisters to make an escape and potentially save the world. She did a heroic.
You're right.
She pulls an Iron Man and sacrifices herself. She doesn't like actually do anything positive. She like doesn't buy them any time, but like the thought was there. Like, she was trying.
She does do the "you go, yeah. I stay." Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Sacrifice.
Like, it doesn't do anything, but like, she does do it. I would like everybody to keep that in mind when something happens at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. And from the frame of reference of the witches in particular, they don't know how long it did or did not take for him to suck his blood back into his body. So as far as they know, she did a great job, and the reason the plan did or did not succeed may as well have hinged on her sacrifice, despite the fact that she was a little bit of a shithead before then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fair. Yeah. Just something to think about later when certain things are said or done about Madison. Anyway, upstairs, Mallory, like, is dying, but, like, not fast enough for Delia to revive her or something. I'm not sure. They really hype this scene up as, like, "Oh, no, like, we're running out of time." Ugh. And I'm like, time so that Delia can revive her when she dies? Or, like, what do you mean running out of time? Like, do we want her to die or not? It's really not clear in this scene. But Marie Laveau, like, comes running in the room and is like, "You gotta get Mallory out of there. I'm gonna go stop Michael." Round two of trying to stop Michael. And she does confront him. And she actually gets some magic off. She does some magic, and there's like a magic fight, kind of. And it's probably the closest thing to a magic fight we actually have in American Horror Story. And it's like fine. It's not good, but it's like something. And it's just long enough to distract him so that Coco can stab him in the back. Which, like, good job, girls. You did it. Coco was useful after all. But it doesn't matter, because Michael Langdon rips out Marie Laveau's heart and eats it because he can. I don't know. They don't say it makes him stronger or anything. I think he just wanted to do
it.
Yeah, it's literally that.
Look cool when I do this. It's sick.
And then he snaps Coco's neck with his mind. Cool, I guess. They couldn't afford the special effects of blowing up two people, so they just blew up Madison and then snapped Coco's neck.
Coco's entire job was be related to someone with money.
Yeah.
Be mean to Mallory. Die.
Yeah.
Yep.
They were having a whole arc of Coco finding out if she had a more useful power or whatever, and that just never really... You know what? They got me again. This is my fault at this point. Because they did this with the murderous coochie powers.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, oh, surely her being able to kill a man with her vagina will be relevant in some point. That'd be a crazy Chekhov's gun, you know? Mm. Just like, oh, yeah. The vagina that kills. It. Surely this has to be plot relevant later.
If a vagina is referenced, somehow, it must explode. Yeah, exactly. But
Yeah, exactly. It better explode. Explode before the end of the third act. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they just did it again. You know, they did it again. Just this time it was something that was like mundane and something that was like exciting. So I was like, okay, well, maybe they'll have fun with the mundanity and have it like turn into something. No, of course not. No, Coco's dead.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Poor Coco.
Only important for her father's money. I think even at Robichaud's too, I feel like it was all bullshit. Like, oh yeah, no, that's a good power. You know,
I genuinely think her whole thing was so that they could have this extremely like vague, nebulous power of like, oh, she can sense danger. That's it. Is she can sense danger, even though that is not at all what she had been doing, at all. And it had no other payoffs. But that the two ladies doing that managed to buy just enough time because Michael loves to do a little monologue and a little showboating. And it got them just enough time to get Mallory into a bathtub and start the time travel spell as she bleeds out in the bathtub. And I'm
like, if the bathtub is so fucking mission critical, it feels like they should have had a plan for a tub. What's the minimum on this? Can you have like a portable little... Can I like pop out a kiddie pool and like just dunk a witch into the past?
Hey, wait. Why would this like post-apocalyptic bunker that had to survive some like keep all these resources have enough like bathtub water?
Like a random claw-footed tub.
Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't even eat or whatever, but it's like, oh, we got around in my fucking bath.
I love rolling around in my drinking water. That's my favorite thing to do in the apocalypse. And again, they don't explain why it is critical, because I'd like to remind everybody, no one's ever done this spell and had it work, so I don't think they even have, like, a frame of reference of, like, yeah, this is how we do the spell, because no one has fucking done the spell.
You know what? I'm thinking about it now, team, and the problem with our spell that is supposed to send people back in time, but currently all it does is drown witches. The part where we hold them underwater for a really long time. Can we maybe think about taking that part of the spell out? Do you think it would work without that? Can we maybe give it a try?
No.
You know, before we drown any more witches? Because it seems like right now we have a spell to drown a witch, which is not.
Let's run it by Cordelia.
Terribly practical.
Let's run it by Cordelia first and see if she thinks you're right. That'll be our rubric.
Oh my god. And again, I'm once again reminded that like Cordelia's whole deal in season 3 was literally is a healing witch who does botany stuff. So I don't know why she can't just heal Mallory at this point and like do it and it's fixed. Who could say?
Also, she's the Supreme.
Yeah.
She's the Supreme. She can just breathe in someone. She can, like, cough in your mouth and you come back from hell. Like, what do you mean she can't just put a Band-Aid on her? That's the thing, too, is, like, this is, like, a physical wound, right? It's not a case of, like, a Michael hit her with a cursed brand and now she can't do magic right or so. You know, like, it's not something like that. Brock stabbed her with, like, a knife. You know? Like, made of metal? It's not a spell.
Yeah, we watched.
Like, I would get it if it was Michael and it was like a purple dagger that was glowing, yeah. And he's like, "Yeah, this is my dad's knife." I'd be like, "Okay, yeah, he can't do that."
Yeah,
but like, it was Brock with a sword from the gas station. Like, it's not...
Quite literally, probably like from a gas station. Like, it's probably just like a broken off piece of metal he found like on the ground.
A pocket knife.
Probably. Well, you know what? He powered up with some of those gas station dick pills with like Ryu on the cover or something, you know?
Oh my God.
Yeah, taking my triple stinger B Nitro Express and hunting for my ex wife.
Oh my God. So, Mallory dies, and before you guys get too excited and think, oh, well, that's going to make, for your next episode, you're going to tell us that that makes Cordelia go Super Saiyan, because if the next Supreme dies, then that means that the Supreme who was dying gets all her powers back and gets super strong. Fuck you. That's not what's going to happen in our next episode, but I'm not going to tell you what does happen, because it's... We don't have time, and I'm going to get mad, so.
Yeah. That's, I think, the only way. Yeah.
They have to. The cool thing about time travel, right, is that, like, you can be so creative with it. You can be so clever with it. It allows you to play with one of the few dimensions and like real logical lines that hold you solid in writing. Like, there's very few things, right, that limit what you can put on a page and have it be coherent. And time travel lets you really let loose on one of those. So you can have some really creative stuff. So as an exercise to the audience, if you're not watching along at home, first of all, bless, thanks for listening. Second of all, how would you, if you were Mallory, sent back in time to, I'll even tell you, like, let's say the day after Michael Langdon got long, like when he was still like 5 years old in his brain, but he was like long as a teen or whatever, what would you do? And, feel free to, you know, make it a writing experiment, you know, think of like a clever way, you know, like going back in time and poisoning something or preventing something from happening, or maybe you do something to Constance and it keeps him from ever fully digivolving into Satan or whatever.
Let me try a challenge here. If you're taking a shit later and you have a spare 5 minutes or less or so, whatever, see if you can come up with something better than American Horror Story did for how you would change the past and interrupt a nuclear apocalypse. Just say anything more profound or meaningful without knowing what it is. Just like, on offhand, doing some laundry, you only got 30 seconds to check the wash. Try to think something up. Maybe you'll come up with something. I don't know. Who knows?
I have faith in you. Yeah, I have faith in you that it'll be probably better than what ends up happening, listener. I have to be honest.
I think you just take the word probably right the fuck out of that sentence. It will be better.
Yeah. It's gonna be awesome, everyone. This is one of the greatest final episodes of a season I think we're ever going to have. Yeah, I'm very excited. Right. Holy shit, we have so much to talk about next time. Thank you so much for listening. I hope to see you again. Whatever. I hope you're listening for the next episode. It's gonna be crazy. Have a great night.
Bye.